You're with us on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent.
A gravestone recipe is etched into a person's final resting place, and each recipe is a glimpse into somebody's life, preserved in granite. You can find these kind of markers in cemeteries all over the country.
Like a recipe for spaghetti chicken casserole at a gravesite in Racine, easy potato rolls from Pine River, Minnesota, and Red Lantern cheese dip in Dow City, Iowa.
The author of a new cookbook describes herself as a taphophile. She's passionate about cemeteries and gravestones. While researching funerary practices, she learned about the creative ways people mark their graves.
Rosie Grant is the creator behind Ghostly Archive on TikTok and Instagram. Her new book is called To Die For, a cookbook of gravestone recipes, and it features 40 gravestone recipes with stories about the people who made these dishes. Rosie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
When we picture a headstone, you know, we think of a person's name and the dates of their birth and death, and maybe there's an epitaph, but you say there are so much more elaborate and creative approaches to gravestone markers. What kinds of things have you seen?
Oh my gosh, literally anything that you could imagine that might be important to a person, I've probably seen onto a gravestone. That might be people's pets, hobbies, someone's fishing pole that they liked using, their boat that they loved driving, their local nickname, anything, favorite movie quotes, and then, yes, of course, a favorite recipe. It's just so fun to see a modern cemetery has so many different markers for memorials these days.
You write about how you first encountered gravestone recipes, that you hadn't seen them before. Can you talk about that first time?
Yeah. So the first one I learned about was for a woman named Naomi Odessa Miller Dawson, who was buried in Brooklyn, New York. And at the time I was interning at Congressional Cemetery in Washington, D.C., and I'd started a TikTok account about what it's like to intern at a cemetery just because this was a new world for me. And I thought, you know, the death industry was endlessly interesting. So while I was doing that, I was featuring different unusual memorials because I was so used to the like traditional epitaph of like mother, father, a spiritual quote, a memento mori symbol, like, you know, the wing and skulls. And I was so struck seeing Naomi's gravestone. I saw it on a blog called Atlas Obscura, and it has this really beautiful, it looks like an open cookbook. And it's this book on a pedestal and her recipes inscribed on it. And I was so struck by that. So I tried making her cookie recipe, and that kind of led the journey to other gravestone recipes.
I like also how you brought it to her grave and ate those cookies there as you reflected on the recipe.
Yeah, that felt like, I mean, it started a little organically. With Naomi, I was driving through New York, and my mom and I were going to stop by to visit her, and I was thinking of what flowers would she have liked and wanted to, you know, have left on her grave. And then I figured, well, you know, she made these cookies. Maybe I should make her cookies and then, you know, we can have like a little moment thinking about her at her gravestone. And when it came to with Naomi, I was like, well, if I'm visiting Naomi, I should visit this other woman who's buried nearby. So we went and did the same thing with Connie. And then, you know, a third person, when I visited this woman named Kay, who's buried in Utah, she has a fudge recipe. And when I went to her gravestone, it was funny, I brought the fudge and there was another family there also with Kay's fudge. They were not related to her.
Wow.
So both of us traded our fudge recipes that were Kay's. Theirs tasted much better than mine. But we had this really sweet moment, this family that was basically teaching their kids about cemeteries. So yeah, there's just something very fun about food and memorial that it's just kind of grown from there.
With this cookbook, you say, this isn't a normal cookbook. It's a community archive of recipes.
Yeah, the community archive part of it was very much my driving force when dealing with communities in grief. So the idea that like this is basically a person who's passed away and there are people who in recent times remember them, still celebrate them, still miss them. And so the community archive portion was just, you know, if this was a person who had a gravestone recipe and I was going to include them in this kind of unusual cookbook, it had to feature the story behind the person. It wasn't just a collection of recipes. It was also tales sort of behind the recipe. And it had to be through the voices of the people who knew them. So the largest part of this process in researching the book was actually just reaching out to families, getting their blessing, hearing their stories. And so rather than me telling people what it was or just handing out a bunch of recipes without context, it was really important to have that like story with each one.
Hmm. And these people would come to life for you, you know, even beyond the recipes. I wonder if you can talk about that ritual of making family recipes and how, you know, just cooking them bonds us to the loved ones who've passed.
Yeah, it's so, I think like this project has really taught me, I love food. My family loves a good gathering surrounding a table. And I think I didn't fully appreciate how important food traditions and rituals are for connecting with one another. You know, the idea of someone cooking for you is such a gesture of love and time and labor. And all of these families, the reason why in a lot of cases this recipe was picked was because it was something they would make every holiday. They would host all the gatherings. They were this like centerfold of their community and their loved ones. And there was something lost when that person passed away. And people were like, who's going to celebrate our birthday? And like, what are we doing for Christmas this year? Because that person used to host it every year. And so really forming those traditions and taking the time. The recipes don't have to be that fancy. And I think about in my own family, when I'd started the book process, both of my grandmothers had just passed away. And at the funeral of one of them, we were talking about this yellow cake that she would make for all of our birthdays. And we were like, oh my gosh, we're going to miss her cake. And she made it for like every single birthday for every year. And my mom was like, it's just box cake. Like there's nothing that fancy about it. But it was like, to me, that's still yellow cake is just my favorite birthday cake. I want it every year. And so, yeah, it doesn't have to be fancy, but it's just that time spent with others over food. So when I started meeting with the families, in some cases, we actually cooked together just to kind of recreate that experience of like, what would you talk about while the cookies were baking? And like, when would you make these and that sort of thing?
Rosie Grant is with us, author of the new book, To Die For, A Cookbook of Gravestone Recipes. Rosie, let's get into some of these recipes, starting here in Wisconsin with Karen Nelson's spaghetti chicken casserole. Were you able to visit Karen's gravesite? What did you learn here?
Oh my gosh. Yes, I visited her. She was one of my favorite people that like the discovery process was so enjoyable. I believe I'd learned about Karen's gravestone from Reddit. Someone had walked past her grave and posted it in a Reddit thread. And so I reached out to the cemetery and I was like, and this is a pretty common in just researching and trying to connect with the families. But I called them and, you know, I had asked for details and the woman who worked there was like, oh, we don't normally, we would never bother the families for something like this. This is personal information. They're like, that being said, this family is so fun. They love this woman so much. They had this huge party when she passed away. They made this casserole. They brought, I think, like cider, and they just gathered around her gravestone. They invited all the people who worked at the cemetery, and they had basically a party at her grave to celebrate her. And they'll even still, like, her granddaughters occasionally will take lunch at her bench. And she is just so loved. And so in any case, they reached out to the family. And like, it was like 30 minutes later, I got a text from the daughter being like, hey, let's chat about my mom. And her daughter, Michelle, just tells so many funny stories about this woman. She loved Christmas. She was like Hallmark times 10 for Christmas. She would make these incredible cakes. And like, yeah, her bench is just incredible. And one thing I thought was kind of cool is the way that her body was placed. In some cases, cemeteries have different like regulations of like where people are facing. But in the case for them, they wanted her facing her bench. So like when you're sitting at the bench, it's like you're having a conversation with her.
Oh, I also loved how her daughter Michelle said that, you know, casseroles were in her DNA, and casseroles and weekly dinners were the currency of the community, of Racine. And I thought that was so lovely, and it really touched to the heart of the impact Karen made on her family and the community.
Yeah, like hearing about their weekly dinners and the fact that the grandkids, Michelle was even saying, she was like, you know, grandma can make other things. And the kids wanted this exact casserole every single week because it was just comfortable and like it was delicious. And it was, you know, it just feeds you really well. And when making it, I was like, well, this is great. I have all of my meal prep and leftovers for the week. I can bring this to a dinner party. Like, it just feeds a lot of people. And so I love that that tradition got carried forward with them, like, still making this casserole.
Okay, we're going to go slightly to our neighbor west here, Pine River, Minnesota, with Isabella Carlson's Easy Potato Rolls. What was so special about these rolls for Isabella and her family?
Oh, that was such a special one, too. I visited her, actually, just her, and I was lucky enough to get to meet her daughters. We met at a local diner where another family member was actually the cook at. And Isabella, again, similar, was such a center of her community and showed love through cooking for other people. She was this chef at a local summer camp, and she would make the rolls. She would make other dishes, too. And the kids, like, still remembered her years later. And from my understanding is a bunch of them even like bust out for her funeral. They were, you know, a few hours south in the city. And when they had heard that she passed away, all these people came out to attend her funeral. And the potato rolls are really good. They're kind of like to me, like sort of Hawaiian potato rolls, but having them fresh, mm-hmm. like fresh out of the oven, homemade, the way that your like house smells. And when her daughters would talk about, she was like, there's nothing like when they were away for college and when they were homesick, their mom would be making these potato rolls, and they are like, we can smell that, and just we are immediately back in our mom's kitchen.
Oh, that is really special. We also have to talk about the entry for the radio star, Deb Nelson from Crawford County, Iowa. What is the story behind her Red Lantern cheese dip?
Oh my gosh, what isn't the story with Deb Nelson? Deb was such a lark. Like you said, with all of these people, I wish I'd known them. I wish I'd met Deb Nelson. She is just such a phenomenal person. And like, it still feels so, someone who's just so present in her community. So when I went out there, I feel like I couldn't get like five steps without someone new coming along who had a Deb Nelson story. So yes, she was a local radio DJ and like, neighborhood mom. She would host really fun parties. She would have these iconic Halloween costumes every year. And yeah, she, you know, won pickle contests. And when it came to the Red Lantern cheese dip, the recipe that's on her gravestone, basically there was a local sort of steakhouse called the Red Lantern, and her eventual husband, he would go very often, and she would be like his server, and he would always order this cheese dip. And eventually he asked her out, and then they got married, and they had their wedding reception at the Red Lantern. And then for holidays, she would make a whole big batch of this cheese dip and hand it out to all of their neighbors and friends and family. And you would only get more cheese dip the following year if you brought your jar back. So it was this like really fun tradition. And like her daughter even talks about when people would ask for this recipe, she would say like, essentially, like, you can have it at my funeral. You can have it over my gravestone. Whether she was kidding or not, like, she said it very frequently. And so when she passed away, her family was like, well, I think we know what we have to put onto her gravestone. It's the cheese dip recipe.
I love the note from the family that the bacon bits and the recipe should be the ones you buy at the store that may not contain any real bacon. I mean, the shortcut nature of some of these recipes that they weren't, like, they were unfussy. They weren't snobby about ingredients.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, some of the recipes are, like, pretty short and sweet. Or they're like a classic grandmotherly recipe that makes a million cookies. None of them are super complicated. And I think both that's a wonderful thing about some of the staple foods that we crave when we're homesick or we are nostalgic or we want to feel like we're celebrating our special day, something like that. It's like, sure, we love a fancy steak tartare, but we also love a chocolate chip cookie. And so I love that a lot of these recipes are actually pretty simple.
Rosie, you've been surrounded by the topic of death while writing this book. How did working on this project change your perspective on death?
I think for me, it made me realize that I was like the taboo side of death in Western culture, I was very much living in. Like, I should say my parents are both ghost tour guides, so I wasn't unaware of cemeteries. But at the other side of, I think, the concept of death itself, I found very scary. And I remember being a little kid and being like freaked out about the idea that one day all of my loved ones will pass away. And I think for me, the way I had dealt with that growing up had been like, well, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it because then, you know, it won't happen or something like that, which is not how these things work. And so I think seeing the celebration of life of all of these people makes me much more comfortable talking about these things. I can talk about it with friends now. I feel like just much more open about like, well, how do you want to be remembered? Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? Do you want a recipe? Do you love music? Do you want your favorite music notes? Do you want this being played at your funeral? And I really love this concept of like, what's the thing that people will see in the future that they'll think about me when they see that? And so in any case, it's just made me a lot more comfortable thinking about these things.
Rosie, thank you for the conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Rosie Grant. Her new book is called To Die For, A Cookbook of Gravestone Recipes.